argument this morning is United States against Ortiz. Ms. Collison.
May it please the court, Laura Cullison on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Jose Ortiz. Additional relevant conduct is a fearsome tool. In this case, it was used to add 17 years to what would otherwise have been an approximately 3-year sentence. While this 17-year increase violates the Booker rule, Booker does not address the issues that are at the heart of this appeal. These two issues were identified by the court in its December 2003 order, in which it directed counsel to address two questions. First, did the government meet its burden to show that the statements by Carlos Rapol regarding a large-scale, widespread drug conspiracy that was shut down in 1999 were part of a common purpose, common plan, or similar to the activities that Mr. Ortiz was charged with and pled to, which were sporadic drug sales, three of them, in 2000 and 2001. And secondly, were the uncorroborated, inconsistent, and contradictory statements of Mr. Rapol reliable? The answer to both of these questions, pre- or post-Booker, is no. Mr. Ortiz's sentence is unreasonable and should be reversed. Even accepting Mr. Rapol's problematic testimony at face value, it does not establish relevant conduct. Along with the enormous gap between 10 ounces and 100 kilograms of cocaine, there is also a temporal gap of a year between the cocaine purchases described by Rapol and the cocaine sales to the government's informant, which occurred in 2001. The three transactions that Mr. Ortiz was charged with and pled to were sporadic and involved Mr. Ortiz and the same confidential government informant. These three sales spanned an entire year from September of 2000 until September of 2001, when Mr. Ortiz was arrested. In contrast, the activity described by Rapol involved a large-scale, major drug ring conspiracy and weekly purchases of cocaine over time. A single one of these purported weekly transactions would exceed the entire amount of cocaine that Mr. Ortiz was charged with. Moreover, it's undisputed that the conspiracy that Rapol was involved in ended in 1999 when Rapol was arrested. The government, in its response brief, essentially asked the court to find relevant conduct here based on two incorrect assumptions. The first assumption is that Gary, Lake Station, and Valparaiso, Indiana, can all be considered the same place.
Are you saying that the relevant conduct finding could not be made, or only that the district judge did not make it?
The district judge here clearly found that the conduct was relevant and sentenced Mr. Ortiz based on that.
Where did the district judge make the finding that this was all part of a single scheme or plan?
This issue was raised at the second half of the sentencing hearing, and this issue was presented to the court, I believe, starting on...
The district judge said that he credited the claims, but I thought the problem here was that he never found, as is essential to relevant conduct, that all these other sales were part of a common scheme or plan. Am I misunderstanding this?
We raised two errors here, Your Honor. One was the lack of specific findings making the necessary nexus, but the other was also that implicit in finding and adding these 100 cocaines was that the court found that this was relevant conduct.
You don't need to argue that. We've said over and over that this finding has to be explicit. It's not enough just to make the sentence. Otherwise, the relevant conduct rules might as well be incinerated. Actually, I have to make a finding. The question I was then asking is, are you saying that it would be impossible to make such a finding on this record?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Ortiz's position is that Mr. Rapol's testimony should be thrown out and he should be released.
Well, assuming his testimony is credible, what's the status of the relevant conduct in that case?
Assuming it's credible,
could you find relevant conduct here?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. If you look in our reply brief on page 4, we set out a chart which shows that there is absolutely no correlation between the activity that Mr. Rapol describes and the activity that Mr. Ortiz was charged with. He was charged with 3 sporadic sales over the course of a year. There are no common victims. There's no common modus operandi. There's no common location. There are simply none of the factors that this course has used to find that necessary connection. And that is why we think that even if the court were inclined to look at this as just a simple matter of, well, the court forgot to make specific findings, so we should send it back down, the government's response brief shows you everything that the court could possibly find to relate these two things, and it simply is not enough. And as this court has held, the government doesn't get a second chance on this issue of relevant conduct when it has been raised below, which it has been, and argued and decided by the court. There is an absence of specific finding here, but because of the record, there's no need to remand this for specific findings because there are no specific findings that the court could make. We know what this relevant conduct is. Mr. Rapol testified.
Well, look, I'm going to be asking this question a lot in the future. But one of the things that happens in Booker when the Supreme Court says the guidelines become less flexible is that it works both ways. That is, the judge may not have to impose a sentence as high as before, but the judge also may move more in the direction of real offense sentencing. Right? My sense of what's going on here is the judge was holding Ortiz culpable for all provable drug transactions in his past, whether or not they were part of a common scheme or plan. If you want to pursue a Booker theory, if Booker is going to be applied, doesn't it follow that the judge is then free to do exactly that?
There's no question that Booker has dramatically changed the landscape of sentencing. But,
well,
as
one,
we...
let me then listen to the follow-up. One possibility, of course, is the defendant could stipulate, avoid any Booker error, and lock in the guidelines and prevent the judge then from raising the sentence based on beliefs about other bad things the defendant had done. So one question I'm asking you is whether in the post-Booker world you really want to be urging Booker as opposed to saying we will stipulate to the actual amount and we then insist that the guidelines be administered in the old way rather than giving the district judge more flexibility. Because it looks in this case like flexibility may not be the defendant's friend.
Your Honor, we would ask that this court find that Mr. Rapol's conduct is not relevant and is not credible. Beyond that, on the Booker issue, if the court needs to get to that, we would agree that it's a brave new world of sentencing, and it's not clear what the impact of Booker is going to be. But the point of our brief and the point of our supplemental briefing is that if Rapol's testimony should not have been admitted, and it clearly should not have been, as relevant conduct, and the government doesn't get a second chance to dress up Rapol and make him sound better, they have to live with the testimony that he presented. And in that case, you don't even get to Booker. And you don't even get to a question of how would the sentencing hearing be different. There's no need for a resentencing here. We know exactly what occurred at sentencing, and we know what the law requires, and we know that that wasn't met here.
I don't think you've grasped my question. Maybe you'll want to give it more thought after you go back. If there's a Booker error here, one of the things that is going to happen is that the relevant conduct limits, that is, the limit to something that is part of the same scheme or plan will no longer be binding on the district judge. Some of the binding features of the guidelines hurt the defendants, and some of the binding features of the guidelines help the defendants. The one you're invoking on this appeal is one of those that helps defendants. In the post-Booker world, that aid goes away. It's one reason why I wonder whether your strategy really entails reliance on Booker.
We believe that the court can resolve this case without addressing Booker. But there are clearly things in the record that Mr. Ortiz would have raised at sentencing in a post-Booker world that he was not able to hear. I see that I'm out of time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. Ms. Johnson.
Excuse me. Thank you. Sharon Johnson from the United States of America. The appellant raises the issue regarding the relevant conduct findings and how the court determined those findings. The government submits initially that those issues are waived. During the sentencing hearing, it was very clear that Ortiz failed to object to the final decision by the district court judge.
And why does anybody have to object to the district judge's final decision?
Well,
how is your position consistent with Criminal Rule 51A?
Well, Judge, in our it's the government's position that in a case like this, where we're now reviewing the district court's findings on relevant conduct, if the defendant had objected, the court would have had that.
How is your position consistent with Rule 51A?
Well, Judge, our position is that the court would have, the government would have had a chance to provide more information at the sentencing hearing.
Is there
as
any
well.
Chance you will talk about Rule 51A?
Judge, well, our position is that the district court would have made a specific finding at that time if there
Look,
had been an objection.
Do I have to quote it to you? Rule 51A says exceptions are unnecessary. Mm-hmm. The procedure you're calling for, that is, after the district judge makes his ruling, the defendant's lawyer stands up and says, that's wrong because. That's known as an exception. Rule 51A says exceptions are unnecessary. So how is your position consistent with Rule 51A?
Well, Judge, in light of your question, the government would just submit that the waiver, again, would have just given us an opportunity.
But there was an objection before, right, before the court ruled. The defendant objected and said this is not relevant conduct. It shouldn't be counted as relevant conduct. There are credibility problems with this guy. There's been no tie-up between.
Well,
the defendant did object, right?
No, looking at the record, it appeared that the defendant really objected to the credibility of Mr. Repal, and he denied relevant conduct, but he did not specifically say the court has not made a finding as regarding the common scheme or plan or the same.
Yeah, but the fact that he objected before sentence was imposed, and even though it was one argument that dealt with credibility, that's enough to preserve the issue. That's enough to preserve the issue. So you shouldn't ride that horse anymore. That's a dead horse. So, I think you need to speak to this, the chart that they put in there showing that there was no tie-in, and notwithstanding the question that Judge Easterbrook has asked whether or not this is a better world for defendants on this point post-Booker, because what he's saying is the gates are totally open. That's what he's saying. If the guidelines are out on this common scheme and the court is not bound by that, then the court could just look at any conduct for purposes of sentencing. That's a different question than whether or not it's tied to this relevant conduct. But we're not going to get into that. What I want you to address is the relevant conduct in the response to their chart as to how you tie this in to a common scheme.
Well, the way the government ties this in, that we believe that there was just a temporal gap based on the fact that there was two factors that occurred. One, Carlos Repal was arrested, who is the witness for the government who observed these prior transactions. So he was no longer available to observe further drug activity of Mr. Ortiz. Also, one of Mr. Ortiz's suppliers by the name of Jay Zambrano was arrested, which was also in the testimony at trial.
That brought the conspiracy to an end, didn't it?
Well, actually, what happened is Mr. Ortiz, it appears, found another supplier the government was able to secure other confidential informants to make these control buys from Mr. Ortiz. And even during some of those control buys, which is also in the record.
Well, the conspiracy that presumably involves the relevant conduct came to an end in 1999, right?
That is correct.
Okay.
But it does appear
we have some conduct in 2000 and 2001.
Which is Mr. Ortiz's own.
Which involves Mr. Ortiz, who allegedly was a conspirator before that, but that's contested here.
And which means that he continued his drug activity by getting another supplier, and even during some of
the. And even the government doesn't seem to know what their case is, because they originally said that the matter involved 2 kilograms, and they went up to 15, and now we're up to several hundred, I guess.
Well, what happened, and this is a lengthy investigation, the government made a conservative estimate of the kilograms that Mr. Ortiz was involved in with these other drug traffickers. And then when Mr. Repol testified, he testified in detail. He was not contradicted. He was subject to cross-examination and tied Mr. Ortiz into over 100 kilograms of cocaine.
Right. And the only supplier that I see that he even identified, although he couldn't break down where these hundreds of kilos of cocaine came from, was this Jay Zambrana. And he didn't say that all these hundreds of kilos were supplied by him, did he?
No, Your Honor.
And he doesn't have the date of any purchases from any supplier, or the frequency of purchases from any supplier, or the location. And there is one location, Gary, Indiana, generally speaking. But nothing more specific.
Excuse me. He talks about it being an ongoing activity. Every so many weeks, when Mr. Ortiz would run out of drugs, that Mr. Zambrana would then supply him again. So he reflects that there was ongoing activity between 97 and 99. But more specifically, going to the Booker issue, even if the district court, if this were remanded, and the district court made a finding that this was not relevant conduct, based on Booker, the court could consider this as evidence and do an upward departure from the guidelines. If they found, which they
Unless
already found, that this
the defendant
evidence
waives any claim under Booker.
That's correct, Your Honor. And
because if the defendant waives a claim under Booker, then the district court is stuck with what you're stuck with what's charged in the indictment and what he pled to.
Well, we understand that, but the government's first position, which we believe is supported in the record, there is ample evidence under either theory of relevant conduct that supports a finding that this was a common scheme or plan. All of these occurrences took place at this oil lube shop. They were involved in the same Lake County, Indiana area. So there's a common scheme or purpose of what this
Well, you didn't receive the drugs, according to Ripple, at the lube shop. He went to Zambrano's place to get the drugs, according to Ripple.
And there were also times where they would meet on Central Avenue, which was near this oil lube place.
Any events that took place at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue in 1997 and 2002 must be part of a common scheme or plan?
Well, in this situation where you have a defendant who's just ongoing drug trafficking in Lake County, Indiana, who's maintaining contact with other drug traffickers, this could be seen as a common scheme and plan. And that was one of the reasons that the district court noted how credible Mr. Repol's testimony was. He was very detailed regarding these transactions, the people that were present during these transactions. And in fact, it's well settled that a sentence may be affirmed on any grounds found in the record, regardless of the rationale that was actually used by the district court. And in this case, we feel that looking at some of the cases that we have cited in our response brief, there have been relevant conduct findings that have been affirmed almost on identical facts. We've cited United States versus Seitz, United States versus Spry, where there's higher level distribution of quantities going to a lower distributor, and there's similarity in the ongoing drug trafficking. And that is what the government alleges occurred here.
Why was it similar? I mean, the sales here are relatively small quantities as opposed to receiving several hundred kilos a week or whatever the other deal was.
There's portions of the record where Mr. Ortiz, it's clear that Mr. Ortiz even says that to the confidential informant that was used in 2000 and 2001 that he could obtain kilogram quantities of cocaine. So it appeared that Mr. Ortiz was still ongoing with his drug trafficking and kilogram quantities of cocaine.
Even though his supplier was then serving time, huh?
He found another supplier, which...
we don't know who that is, do we?
We don't know who that is. And there was nothing in the record to suggest who that new supplier was. But based on the comments that he made to the confidential informant in 2000 and 2001 and the similarity in these transactions, we would submit that the record shows ample evidence to support the district court's finding that this was relevant conduct. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Ms. Collison?
If the court here were to rule that Mr. Rapol's testimony should not have been considered, either because it does not constitute relevant conduct or because of the significant credibility problems and reliability problems in his physically impossible testimony, we would, in that case, waive the Booker issue, Your Honor, and I think that answers your question.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Ms. Collison, and we appreciate your willingness and that of your law